491 of the Survival Podcast. For those of you guys and gals tuning in to the live stream today, I'm going to let you know that I do have a new camera, and it may help and it may not. I think I actually figured out what was causing the crappy video for the last week. And by the way, if I have crappy video, I don't know that there's much that I can do about it while I'm live. As Mike here from Tennessee says, I'm live without a net. But if you don't tell me, then I don't even know. Because last week, while I was having those crappy live streams as far as video quality, me looking at myself on the back end, crystal clear, crystal clear. StreamYard recently did something with the ability to both live stream and record locally at the same time, so that if your video quality sucked, you could always download the local recording that would then upload to your StreamYard account. And then that was supposed to fix the problem. I actually think, unlike permaculture and technology, maybe the solution was the problem. Because last week, after I got this new webcam, which is a fixed focus webcam, so I won't go in and out of focus because it's trying to decide what to do for me, I put it up and I did several different tests, and they all ended up looking great in the back end and then crappy on YouTube. And then I shut that freaking feature off and woohoo, it works. So if y'all can let me know how I look, and no comments about the fact that I'm some ugly old dude. I know that. Just am I clear as an ugly old dude? That's it. And I apologize for this little spike here in the head. And Mitchell's saying, I guess you're no longer on Rumble. I should be on Rumble right now with all the other streams as well, because I'm looking at it and R and a big green check mark. So I should be on my channel on Rumble right now. Anyway, thanks for letting me know. It looked good. So I know the people in the audio are like, all right, Jack, what the hell are we going to talk about today? You just blow on and on about this shit we don't care about. We are doing a show today called Current Events and Listener Feedback, and it's going to be one of these ones where I kind of suck you in with the gloom and doom, and then we do some practical Q&A toward the end, and that way we get more people to show up. So what are we going to talk about today? One, I bet many of you have seen this. I'm going to play the audio of the video anyway for you guys, and I'll play the video of the video for you guys that are on the live stream. One of Biden's senior economic advisors was asked a question about debt, and his answer makes your brain hurt in how incompetent this man sounds. And as bad as it is, because he's a senior economic advisor to the Biden administration, he was also an economic advisor to Biden when he was vice president. When I tell you his pedigree, you're really going to go, I guess DEI is not new, but he's a white dude, so how does this work? I don't know. But it's pretty freaking bad. Jeff must have seen it because he's got it right. He said, that dude scared the hell out of me. Builder of Castle says, is he incompetent or evil? I'll leave that for people to determine for themselves. But I don't believe he's as good of an actor as to seem as incompetent as he seems. We'll also talk about an example of something called marketing nudges to modify behavior. And this is something that you need to understand government does this too. And when they say companies are doing what's being done right now, it's really government is behind it. And it's both public government and private government. Private government's the part of the government you don't see. Private government is also consortiums like the World Economic Forum and things like that. And this is a very important to understand, the incrementalism of doing things like this, so that whether you think what's being pushed is good or bad, at least you know that it's happening to you. Then we're going to talk about teacher layoffs. I have two examples, one in California, one in Massachusetts. And what I'll tell you is right now, if you were to go to Google News and search for teacher layoffs, you will find pages and pages and pages of very recent stories. And you're going to see a lot more of them by the end of summer. We'll talk about the impact of that as we have before. Also, this is something I have no direct media for you on this. This is scuttlebutt that I'm picking up by observing the media in little pieces, parts, and this is one of the reasons you tune into me. I don't watch a source. I don't watch Fox News. I don't use Russia Today only, because Russia Today is Russian propaganda and Fox News is right-wing American propaganda and CNN and MSNBC are left-wing American propaganda. I also use a news aggregation service called Ground News. It's at ground.news and or groundnews.com. I'm not sure which one it is, but it's a paid subscription service I use that aggregates news in from everywhere. And by looking at all these little pieces, plus the scuttlebutt that I get from my own sources, I'm able to put things together that you generally don't hear about in the mainstream media at all as an assemblage. You see pieces, parts. And this is what's about to happen in the Donbas in Ukraine. There's about to be major Russian offenses. They're going to take key locations, and this will tie into the recent rush through $60 billion funding, and I'll tell you what to expect next. It's basically the last days of the false belief that Ukraine can win this war. It's also going to eventually be the end of the idea that Putin's going to take all of Ukraine, because Putin doesn't really even want to be part of Ukraine. He felt like he had no choice and his hand was forced by the Russian parliament, which is something no one else tells you either, apparently. But these major moves are coming, and I'll talk about how they're going to spin, what happens when there's massive failure on the ground in Ukraine, because there's going to be. There's no way around it. I don't care how much money you give them. I don't care how many weapon systems you give them. And hopefully, you know, I say hopefully, the West is smart enough not to go throwing full-on ground troops into Ukraine to stop this, because there is no stopping it. It just isn't. As I said, there wouldn't be on day one. I'm just saying, right? Then we're going to talk about what is the purpose of the pro-Palestine and then also pro-Israel counter-demonstrations on the colleges. What's the purpose of them? The purpose of the system is what it does, right? What is the purpose of this system? Do you think it's to show support for Palestine or to make change for Palestine? If you do, you're falling right into the trap. I'll tell you the purpose of them. And the purpose is way more important than which side of the issue you come down on. The purpose is to make us hate each other. And I'll explain more about that in a bit. Then we'll talk about some things you guys are asking me about. I'll answer a question for a young man and his plans to build a garden bed. I'll talk about how do you fill and maintain the air pump in a chamber vac sealer. Almost 100 of you guys picked up the Vivor chamber vac sealer in the last couple of weeks. And I've got a couple questions about, hey, you said and they said and you're supposed to fill the vacuum pump with this oil before you use it. Where's the vacuum pump? How do I find it? I said some in my video, but not everybody watches videos, so I'll cover it on the air, and hopefully that'll help some people. And this will be true for most chamber vacuum sealers. The way they're all the same. My VacMaster, which is in many ways a different machine, it's similar but different, same but different, man. It's still exactly the same way that you access and get to the vacuum pump and how you take care of it. Because they pretty much all use a very similar vacuum pump, and there's only so many ways to build a vacuum pump. And then I have thoughts on a private email option, and I'm going to explain to you why no matter what you do, it's only as good as the person you're emailing. We'll talk about that. And I will talk about, real quick, a listener emailed me with a use for the releasable cable ties that I've been recommending for, oh, I guess 5 years now. These are cable zip ties that have a little tab on them. And when you zip them shut on something, you push the little tab and they come back off. You put them back on again. And I have found hundreds of uses for these things. They're literally one of the most useful things on my homestead. I have bundles of them stashed everywhere. I have bundles of them stashed out by the garage. I have a bundle of them always stashed in the duck house. I have bundles of them stashed in my vehicles and stuff like that. But man, this is so obvious and in some ways better than the solution that I've been recommending. And to clue you in on it, if you're on the live stream, and if you're not, you'll just have to wait. This is what it replaces. And some of you know what that is, and some of you don't. But one way or another, we will talk about that as we get toward the end here. And then we're going to finish up with a somber reality. Remember always, it's going to get worse. All of this shit that's going on is going to get worse. There will be parts of it to get better, but the overall macro move is downhill as the empire slides. Why? Because the purpose of the system is what the system does, not what it claims to do. And right now, the purpose of the system is to make things worse, because that's what's happening. The purpose of the system is what it does, Stafford Beer. Anyway, before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day, number one today, is Well, where are they? There they are. KnifeKits.com, guys. I really love KnifeKits. They are an incredibly loyal sponsor in the world of podcasts. They have been a sponsor of this show since 2009. 2009, KnifeKits came on board. We started up the MSB with different discounters in the MSB. They were not the first, but they were one of the first. They are the longest continuing supporting sponsor that we have. They've been working us again since with us since 2009. That would have been 10 years in 2019. You want to do a little Common Core math there, and it's 2024. That's 15 years of sponsorship. They are a great company, and they have some cool stuff. And if you've always wanted to learn how to make knives, I say start with the people that make it easy and the people that have supported this show long-term, KnifeKits.com. Next up, Canine Academy, Joel Ryle's operation there. You know, Joel also runs Fortress Canine. He trains some of the best protection dogs in the world. But not everybody's going to go out and spend the money on a protection dog because they are expensive, because they take a lot of work to bring them up to the level that he sells them at. You know, they're 2 years old at that point, very highly trained. But most of us want to be able to train our dogs to fit in our home. Not everybody needs a protection dog. Some people just want their dog to not eat their chickens and ducks. Some of them just don't want their dogs to run away. Everybody wants a dog that doesn't just jump up on people. That all starts with core obedience. That's the Canine Academy Basics course. There's also a monthly program, an annual program, and a free problem-solving library. You should really check them out at canineacademy.us. But if you could, for me, please use the link in the notes below in the video or in the audio notes or the banner on my website, because my agreement with Joel, unlike most of my sponsors, is not just to promote his URL. It's on a affiliate-type relationship. I don't do that a lot, but it just works out better that way with Joel, mainly because I wasn't sure how much I could sell for him, and I didn't want to take his money without knowing that I could, in fact, deliver on it. So let's start off with, again, this went around like crazy this weekend. I'm betting half the people in the live feed here, about 100 of y'all. Oh, by the way, there's 100 of you here. I can't see the likes because I'm in the back room. But if you haven't liked this video and you're sitting here watching the live stream, come on, guys, hook me up before Rachel smacks you, because she will. Rachel is in an undisclosed warehouse, but she will slap you if you do not smash that like, subscribe, and notify. Please do that for me. Really, all kidding aside, it helps. And like four people just left, so maybe I offended you. I'm sorry. Anyway, I'm not sorry when I offend people. I'm really not. I got too much to do to be worried about offending people. Anyway, this guy has made the rounds heavy this weekend. And I find this interesting, too. You know, this does not make Biden look good at all. At all. And I put it up on all social media platforms that I'm on. And I put it up on my TikTok channel, which I hadn't put anything up in a long time. I put it on my YouTube channel, and it just racked up views, like, instantly. On TikTok, it got 11 views. So TikTok is clearly throttling it because, I don't know, maybe, you know, this is why I don't think the TikTok ban's going to happen. Do you really see Biden actually going through with it? I don't. I think this is all a scam to try to get Kevin O'Leary the ability to buy TikTok. Anyway, we'll see where that goes. It did give the president a brand new power, though. It's pretty reprehensible. But this dude here, you want to talk about reprehensible. He's being asked here about debt and why the government prints money and why the government borrows. Why do we print money and borrow money? Like, if we can print money, why borrow it? And if we're borrowing it, then are we printing it? And I'm going to let him answer this first, but then I'm going to tell you his pedigree, like what his education and his you know, job has been up to this point. Because unlike some of the people in the Biden administration who are like in charge of nuclear waste and have no degree in anything to do with energy or nuclear power, this guy actually should be able to answer this question. And that's why there's a lot of people saying, is he just playing stupid? The reason I don't think he's playing stupid, I don't know what benefit there would be to playing stupid this way. But here you go. Why do we borrow money and print money? Let's ask a genius here, a guy with advanced economic degrees.
That they print the dollar. So why does the government even borrow?
Well, so the, I mean, again, some of this stuff gets, some of the language that the MM, some of the language and concepts are just confusing. I mean, the government definitely prints money and it definitely lends that money, which is why the government definitely prints money and then it lends that money by selling bonds. Is that what they do? They sell bonds. Yeah, they sell bonds, right? Because they sell bonds and people buy the bonds and lend them the money. Yeah. So a lot of times, at least to my ear with MMT, the language and the concepts can be kind of unnecessarily confusing, but there is no question that the government prints money and then it uses that money to, I guess I can't really talk, I don't get it. I don't know what they're talking about. Like, cause it's like the government clearly prints money. It does it all the time and it clearly borrows. Otherwise we wouldn't be having this debt and deficit conversation. So I don't think there's anything confusing there.
Wow. He doesn't think there's anything confusing there. I want to read to you the notes that I put with this video to tell you who this man is. This is Jared Bernstein. He's an American economist who currently serves as the chair of the Council of Economic Advisors under President Joe Biden. He is a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He has previously served as the chief economist and economic advisor to the Vice President Joe Biden during the Obama administration. Biden could have given a better answer to this question than this person. I mean, really? Like, to answer that, I see why people are like, well, did he just not want to answer the question, so he took a dive or something? Was it, what's going on? No, I really don't think so. I think this guy is either just as stupid and somehow faked his way through life, or dude's cognitively impaired. This is an answer like, how many times have I explained this on the show? Right? Am I a chief economic advisor to the president of the United States and former economic advisor to the vice president of the United States? Somebody here said that was a Kamala Harris answer. I think Kamala Harris would give a better answer than that. He said, did he teach AOC? I don't know. I think AOC would give a better answer than this. I really do. I'm not saying a lot better. Guys, when I tell you we're economically fucked, I mean we're economically fucked. I don't care if this guy took a dive, because that was a dumb decision. I don't care if this guy genuinely is this stupid, because that's bad. And I don't care if he's cognitively impaired. He shouldn't be doing the job that he's doing if he can't answer this question. And if he took a dive, like the judgment there to sound, I don't think that any of these people are bright enough to act that well. And then to end with, so I don't really think it's that confusing. Bitch, you just said you didn't understand it. You just said you couldn't figure it out. You just said you didn't know, and you ended with, but it's not that confusing. Maybe it's not that confusing because your simple little brain doesn't care enough to know, right? I think as an economic advisor, his job is probably to tell Biden what we should spend money on. Not actual economic advice, just like spend money on DEI, spend money on transgenderism, spend money on woke policies, send money to this country, send money to that country, fund this country's border but not ours. I guess that's what he's doing. But here's what I'm going to say. When you listen to people that are at the top levels of government involved in making economic decisions that do affect you, right? There's a lot of things these people do that we get caught up in and we believe they affect us a hell of a lot more than they do. But what they do with money, that affects everybody. Because how do you pay for shit with money? To me, this is a Bitcoin commercial. This is a Bitcoin commercial because it's the only form of money that is truly exempt from true manipulation of quantity. And I know some of you guys are Peter Schiff fans. My gold, my silver, my gold. I like silver and gold. I stack silver and gold. But if the gold price doubles, they'll dig deeper and mine more gold. That's just fact. there's a lot more gold than you realize. Now, it's a better money than the dollar. That's why you notice I didn't say I stack fiat, right? I invest fiat, I stack gold, I stack silver, and I stack sats. But this, if you ever were under any belief that economically we would long-term be okay, this should have cured you. And if it didn't, this is like a Harley Davidson thing, right? If I have to explain this to you, then you're not going to understand it anyway, because either you're not capable or you don't want to. But just know this. This is a man that is advising the President of the United States and his cabinet about economic issues, and he doesn't know how debt works. I mean, really. Let's just move on. I want to talk about this next thing here. This is something I'm well aware of because of my background in marketing. In marketing, we refer to it as a 7-touch rule. And what that means is, in general, to get a meaningful response from a prospect, you have to touch them 7 times. If they let you, it's going to sound really perverted, right? I'm not Biden, okay? But if they let you touch them 7 times, they will probably take an action in the direction that you're pushing them. And so what do I mean by that? Because you might say, but Jack, sometimes you come out and say, hey, here's this cool product, and I buy it that day. But I've touched you more than 7 times. And so this is known as nudge or incremental marketing concepts, right? And so that might be that I have this marketing campaign, and it leads you to a website. And the website promises you, if you don't want to buy right away, because sometimes people just buy, lay down sales, right? I was looking for it. There it is. I'm going to buy it. But a lot of times, you know, it's like, yeah, this is interesting. And so I offer you a free report, and that free report requires your email address. So you go ahead and fill it out, and I don't look, you know, sketchy to you. So you're like, yeah, I'll give this company my actual email address. And so then you get an email, and it says you're free, and it's actually valuable. We're going to say this is not kind of shifty marketing. This is like legit. And then you start getting regular emails from this company, and there's little tips, little tricks, announcements of sales and things like that. And you get a few of those. And next thing you know, you're on social media somewhere, and either coincidentally or because of cookie tracking, you see an advertisement for it. And then you wonder, well, wait, and sometimes the touch is a pull. There's push marketing and pull marketing. So it's a pull. So you start to think like, well, is this company any good? So you carry your ass to YouTube University and you type in the company's name and put in review, and then you learn a little bit about them. If all those touches add up to a 7 and you have a predisposition or need for this thing or a desire for it, odds are you're going to buy it or you're going to buy something from them sooner or later. If you'll permit that 7 touch, that's why it's called the 7-touch rule. And this is scientific and it's well known. Well, this can be done a lot of ways. Sometimes the objective is a behavior, right? An overall macro behavior in individuals or society as a whole, rather than I want to sell you, you know, an adjustment device for your plant lights, because only people that grow plants would even remotely care about a product that does that. So that's what's going on right now with this whole push towards dun 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 veganism and vegetarianism, meatless Mondays, et cetera, things like that. Let me read just a little bit of this article, and this article is in Bloomberg, because you know they're highly trustworthy, but they're actually telling you the truth here. They really are. They just aren't explaining the implications and why it's being done. The invisible power of nudging is leading diners to cut back on meat. I think inflation is leading diners to cut back on meat, but I digress. A growing number of companies, institutions, and governments, because governments buy the whole thing, are embracing nudge theory to push diners toward plant-based options. Placing plant-based lasagna in the most popular part of the canteen, serving veggie stir-fry so diners have to ask for meat. Renaming vegan food with enticing adjectives like feel-good and juicy. These are just some of the small changes adding up to a quiet revolution in school cafeterias, hospitals, and on university campuses from San Diego to Oslo. The goal is to shift diners toward plant-based options, not by removing animal products entirely, but by nudging people into making different choices. Guys, gals, this is, I didn't put this on today to talk just about me. I put this on to talk to you about what's being done to you on an ongoing daily basis in so many walks of life. My wife and I were watching a TV show recently, and it doesn't matter what the subject was or what the TV show was, but in the show, one of the characters was being attacked maliciously by somebody who wanted to do them in. They brought up something from their past, and it was completely taken out of context, and Twitter was the platform in which it was all presented on the show, and this person was just getting slaughtered, and people that worked with her that knew better started dogpiling and attacking her. And one of the characters said, but you know, thousands of people saying something that must be true, or that many people wouldn't do it. Mind-numbingly stupid, isn't it? Well, it's the same thing. If you get enough people talking about a thing, it becomes an idea that people absorb as their own idea, especially if you can touch them with it at least 7 times. This, again, is nudge marketing. So a perfect example of nudge marketing was the way that they ramped up and amped up COVIDs, right? Because it didn't start out immediately with the fake real-time death counter on your screen. That came a little bit later into it. It started out with, it's really not that bad, but worry, and then maybe worry a little bit more, and then it's on a boat, and then worry, and then Fauci comes out and says, get ready for your life to be disrupted. And then all of a sudden, in one fell swoop, 15 days to flatten the spread, or 14 days to flatten the spread, or whatever, turns into 2.5 years of bullshit, right? If they had gone straight to that, it wouldn't have worked. It was a multi-touch marketing campaign. Now, you can believe all the bullshit narrative if you want to, and if you do at this point, I'm going to suggest that you get a filter for your water and get the fluoride out of it because your brain is soft. But you can believe that, or you can believe it is what it probably is. But it doesn't change the fact of how it was marketed to control people through fear. And this is done over and over and over again. These little things are planted, and TV shows are a big way that they're planted. So if you go back in time 10 years and you start watching pop culture TV series and things like that, especially like medical dramas, which are just like some of the really good ones always end up getting ruined by the wokeism. Like they were actually decent in the beginning and they just go downhill. But if you go back about 10 years, you'll start to see the transgenderism in children bullshit start to be leaked into this. By the way, I have a special child who's been emailing me. He's really upset with me. I'm the problem when it comes to this because I don't think it's a good idea to cut the dick off of a 12-year-old or the breasts off of a 14-year-old girl. Like, that's my fault. Like, he wants to know why I'm picking on people with mental illnesses. I'm not picking on people with mental illnesses. I think that people with mental illnesses shouldn't have their mental illness reinforced as reality. But if you go back and look, you'll see that slowly come in over time. Why? Because it was a plan all along. The purpose of the system is what it does. So if you just go to a completely ludicrous idea, it's okay for a 12-year-old to decide to change their gender, and it's okay for a kindergarten teacher with 15 nose rings who calls himself non-binary to have a job as a kindergarten teacher in the first place, but to talk about sex with kindergartners. If you go straight to that, society as a whole will reject it. But if you nudge market it, right? Nudge marketing, when it's done by the media that we have today in conjunction with the government and non-governmental organizations of today, and it's all a big cabal, it is a series of product placement, concept placement, and FNORDs. And if you've never heard me talk about FNORDs before, you're going to get a lesson in FNORDs today, a very short one. A FNORD is a piece of disinformation in plain sight, and they're very formulaic. They're very easy to see. The FNORDs, once you see the formula. And typically in our headline culture, blah, 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 comma, experts say, is almost inevitably a FNORD. Disinformation in plain sight. Why? Well, because experts say doesn't mean anything. All I need is two people that I claim are experts, and I can put comma, experts say. I got two, and they're experts. And who decided that they were experts? And how wrong have experts been over the last 5 years? But that's a FNORD. Like, you must believe it because experts say. Well, that's not how that works, especially when you get into things that are like science and still contested science and not, you know, we haven't have a final answer yet for, but that nudge marketing works. And we're all subjective to it, right? Like, people are like, no. Not me. I'm aware, Jack. I'm aware, too. You can't have this coming at you all the time from all directions and not be somewhat influenced by it, though. What's important to do is to turn up your bullshit detector and try to see it where it is. Try to recognize the patterns. Try to understand when this is being done to you because it is being done to you. Next, I've said for several years, and I said right about the time COVID's really ramped up, this is going to turbocharge what was already happening, because so many kids are now experiencing homeschool and their parents are experiencing homeschool. And they're also, because of the Zoom school from the regular public school, they got to see how bad some of their teachers really were. And they also got to see, like, their kids do 2 to 3 hours of work a day and be done and get good grades and then wonder, well, what the hell are you doing with my kid for another 5 or 6 hours a day other than conditioning them to behave and obey you? And the answer to that is, well, absolutely, that's what school mostly is. It's conditioning to modify behavior and obedience and compliance to the state. To the state, because it's government school. So it's to the state. I talked about this recently. I call it government school. People get pissed off at me. And I'm like, but it is government school. That's just a conspiracy theory. It's a school paid for and run by government. It's a government school. And by the way, a kid that just assaulted a teacher was charged with what? Assault on a teacher? Assault on an individual? Assault on a, because it's a dude. How about assault on a female by a male? No. 3 counts of assault on a government official. I didn't make it up. I'm not the prosecutor, and good for that prosecutor, by the way. This kid should be prosecuted. When I say kid, this kid was like 16, 17-year-old full man-sized kid that slapped the dog shit multiple times out of a female teacher who I don't understand just sat there in her desk and let him do it. It almost looked as bad as the Will Smith thing with Chris Rock, like just let it happen. It was crazy. I looked at that, by the way, and I'm like, yeah, school's dying. School's dying because culture around school's dying. And this is what I mean. I don't know about you guys, but I'm 51 years old. I'll be 52 in August. And 1980s, Gen Xer, you know, we were like the don't give a shit generation on so many things. But I have to say, and I'm interested to hear from people in the live stream here, if you are anywhere in my age bracket, when you were in high school, if a male student had physically abused a female student, how many other male students would have grabbed the son of a bitch hitting a female and kicked his ass out the door for him? Like possibly going to the ER with some teeth in a cup level. Because I'm telling you right now, even if I didn't like the teacher, there is no way the guys that I went to school with would have allowed one of our own to abuse a woman in front of us. So aside from that, let's talk about these layoffs. So this was sent to me by a listener, and I'm going to read it for you. And this is out of California. And it says, Dear Assembly Member Sanchez, so this is an intergovernmental discussion, the California Teacher Association, CTA, is writing to provide an update on the number of reductions in force, RIF, layoff notifications issued to educators across the state. While the governor's January budget seeks to prevent budget cuts to the classroom, school districts across the state have issued layoff notifications to nearly 1,800 educators in 98 school districts and county offices of education. And then attached you will find some bullshit from government. That's California, but I know California's got problems. Massachusetts has problems too. School districts across Massachusetts weigh teacher and staff cuts. And of course, the teachers are in danger of being laid off due to budget cuts are now going to go on strike to fight against the budget cuts, even though many of them still would keep their jobs. And they want more money and more spending. And you can read the letter or this article yourself. But multiple layoffs have occurred in Massachusetts this year, with more expecting to come. And, of course, there has to be something to blame for this. So rather than blame their own ineptitude, rather than say that maybe we're doing something wrong, rather than look at the fact that more and more people are leaving the places that are having the layoffs, and hence, since there's less children in these places, there is less need for seats for asses in school. If your population goes down of young people, then you don't need as much school resource, you don't need as much teachers, because there's less kids to fucking teach. Instead of looking at this and going, wait a minute, homeschooling has like quadrupled in the last 5 years. Total body count has gone up 4 times in the last 5 years. And if those kids aren't going to school, then there's less kids in the school, and therefore we don't need as many teachers. And the school, see, when I kind of prophesize to this, as some people will use that term when they talk about me, and they'll call me Jackstradamus or something, or Spearcodamus or whatever. It really isn't that. It's what I started off with on the nudge marketing and pattern recognition. All you have to do is look at the trends. And so we just did a show recently on the college enrollment cliff. Well, why is the college enrollment cliff coming? Is it just people not going to college? Well, that's not helping. But it's that there's just less kids coming out of 12th grade that are eligible to go to college because there's less of them. There's less bodies. This number's been in decline. We are not even at replacement level reproduction rates in this country right now. It's something like 2.4 or 2.6 kids per couple is what you need, because some people won't have kids at all. Some people can't have kids. Some people never marry. So per married couple, you need 2.6 children to maintain what you have, and you need a higher number to grow your population. We are under that. Therefore, our population is in decline. Now add to it San Francisco, L.A., Portland, Seattle. People are fleeing these places. Turbocharged again, as I said, by COVIDs, which I said would happen during COVIDs, right? I said, here it is. It's happening. There's mass exodus. People also got to work remotely, and they realized, well, if I can work remotely, then why can't I always work remotely? What do I ever need to go back to? Who the fuck wants to go to an office? Really? If you don't have to. If you work on an assembly line bolting fenders on a car, you either go to work or a robot takes your job, right? Or somebody else gets your job. Like, you can't remote work putting fenders on a car. But if your job is something administrative, which like half the fucking country has a job like that, and you're not directly dealing with on-site customer contact, there's no reason that any person who has a decent work ethic can't work from home. So once people figured that out, they were just like, you know, boss, I don't think I want to come back to work. And then they realized I have the negotiating power here, because a lot of the big companies like, Pinterest, like bailed out on like a 5-year lease on the building, got rid of all their giant buildings, and said, this makes a lot more sense. It saves us money. So then, now I've been working for this tech firm in San Francisco or LA or whatever. All of a sudden I'm cut free. I have the same income or close to it. Maybe even I gave up a little money for this freedom. And I have the same benefits and all of that. And I go to realtor.com and I realize I can get like a 2-man cabin tent in LA for like $500,000. Or I can move to like Nebraska or Kansas or Texas. Please don't come here unless you don't want to fuck it up the way you fucked up where you're leaving, by the way. And I can go there and for $500,000, I can get this awesome freaking house and this awesome freaking neighborhood, something like I could never have where I live. So they leave. So that pulls people out of school. But now I'm working from home. If my kids are like 12, 13, 14, they're kind of self-sufficient, why wouldn't I just keep them at homeschool? So now, not only have I pulled out of this district, I'm not adding to this new district. And this is only going to continue. Colorado Foothills says, problem with the work from home scenarios, there's no tech support to call. Well, if you work for a squared away company that can telnet into your machine, yes, there is. Or if you're like me, that just makes you really efficient at managing your own shit. Because I worked for years as a remote traveling sales manager, and I almost never relied on the mothership to fix my problems. I mean, really, because they, like, you just figure things out, right? Unless it was something to do with something I had to, like, telnet into, like their database or something that I had to go into. If that was the problem, then that's their problem, but that's on their end, right? And I don't really want to do paperwork anyway, so until you fix it, I'm not doing it. Anyway, more layoffs are coming. Now, I want to talk about this Russia-Ukraine thing. I don't want to rehash all the stuff I've already said. I feel that everything I said has been vindicated over and over and over again. I told you guys way back when Russia was all the way to like the edge of Kyiv, I said 2 weeks before it happened, they're about to pull back into the Donbas region, set up shop, and defend that. And there'll be these little skirmishes on the line from there because Putin wants this little piece. It's 15%, maybe it's 10% of Ukraine. And that's the piece he wants because they're 90% ethnically Russian, actually 94% ethnically Russian. They've all voted to be part of Russia, and they're the reason the invasion happened in the first place because they petitioned Russia to help them because, well, Ukraine ignored the Minsk Accords because the Minsk Accords were nothing but a stall tactic that was supposed to grant them autonomy. And Ukraine prosecuted a war against these people for 8 years. Well, let me tell you what's about to happen now. Russia is about to start fucking some shit up hard. Everybody on the know knows this is coming. It is not hidden. There are major new offensives coming. None of them are going to be launched across the whole of Ukraine. Though that is how the talking head idiots will talk about it. Morons like General Jack Keane and shit on Fox News are going to tell you, he's getting ready to take over Poland, some stupid shit like that. No, these are going to be small towns and shit. At the same time, they're hyperventilating this. Every one of these towns that falls, they're going to be telling you it's not that big a deal. It was blown up anyway. It was pretty much abandoned anyway. Well, one of them is a key elevated position about the center of this whole conflict, which will change the battlefield dynamics massively to the favor of Russia. And some of you think right now that I am shilling for Putin or shit. I am just calling balls and strikes. I am just telling you what is about to happen and why it matters. And then this will be the spin. It's all the Republicans' fault. They held up funding. Half of them still don't want funding for Ukraine. If we had just given them the funding earlier, this wouldn't have happened. In a single word or two words, depending on how you spell it, whether you put a space in or not, bullshit. Bullshit. Ukraine is out of people. They are drafting people who are damn near ready to be collecting Social Security. They are drafting people who are not old enough to serve. They are drafting women. They are dragging, the border guards are abducting people, beating the shit out of them, and dragging them back when they try to escape into places like Romania and get the hell out. Because nobody wants to be in this fight anymore in Ukraine. I mean, there's always some diehards that they'll charge in a battle. They don't care, right? They like war. But the vast majority of Ukrainians do not want anything to do with this war anymore. And this is why elections were suspended last year by Zelensky. There is no reason not to have elections. Well, there's a war going. The United States had elections in the middle of World War II. I don't think we had an election during World War I, but only because it ended before the next election. We would have done that. We've had elections in the middle of every conflict we've ever had. Like, we didn't not have elections in the Korean War. We didn't not have elections during the Vietnam War. We didn't not have elections in World War II. And again, I think the only reason we didn't have them during World War I is there just wasn't one while we were involved. The reason they canceled it is because politicians don't like to lose power, and if you had an election in Ukraine right now, Zelensky would get trounced. The average Ukrainian, again, this is if you get past all the bullshit, all the fake crap they keep putting in front of you, all the pretty Ukrainian girls who are ready to go fight Putin with their little black gloves on and their airsoft guns and shit, when you get past that, when you actually listen to people who are talking to people that live in Ukraine, that live and work in Ukraine, that are just normal people that just want their life to go back to fucking normal, they're like, I don't give a fuck about Donbas. I don't care. I do not care. I do not care. Just get out of this shit. This is a mistake. And why wouldn't they? It's not that big of a country relative to something like the United States. And they've conscripted so many people. Everybody knows at least a few people who died and at least a few people who will never be whole again. And they know they're getting nothing out of this. They know they're getting nothing out of it. They know if they were somehow to miracle change things and take Donbas back, They still wouldn't get anything. Their life wouldn't be any better. They're sacrificing with no upside. And it's about to become more obvious. And they're about to go into the realization or the acceptance or maybe just the honest component to they have to negotiate with Russia and Putin. And there is no reason for Putin to take anything less than every piece of territory that he has in a negotiation. None. In fact, he's probably going to want a little bit more. These little pieces of Donbass that Ukraine has managed to keep Russia out of, that's why they're about to do this. Somebody said they're going to retake Odessa. That might happen and it might not. Now, a strategic move for Putin would be retake Odessa, say, I want the Donbass, the piece that voted to be part of Russia. Odessa didn't. Even though it's the jewel of Ukraine, you now have the seaport in Crimea, because that's not all this thing. We're going to take Crimea back. No, you're not. No, you're not, and you never were, and you know you weren't. That shit happened under Obama, for fuck's sake, right? Right. So that's not going in. So they've got that. And if they've got the Donbass, they've got the richest minerals in the country, the richest mining area in the country. And again, if Ukraine actually wanted to be what it claims to want to be, which is kind of like America light and this kind of, you know, their version of right-wing Zelenskyism, they would have let this all go in the first place because Zelensky's gone, right? But his party, once that happens, will never lose another election unless they fuck up what they have. Because that whole piece of Ukraine is like, that would be like the United States giving away California, Oregon, and Washington relative to our voting population. You give away California, Oregon, and Washington, make them their own thing, give them to Japan, whatever. You don't ever have a Democrat president again until there's a complete sea change in the country. Or, you know, get rid of, like, Texas and Florida and Ohio, and you never have a Republican as president again, right, unless there's a major sea change. So anyway, this is fixing to happen. Watch, and I mean over the next 2 weeks. Major Russian offensive, major Russian victories, hyperventilating idiots telling you he's about to take over Poland and saying what they're doing doesn't matter at the same time, and a collective move toward a negotiation table, and then a claim it's the Republicans' fault first, and then second, however the negotiations come out, claiming victory and saying the $60 billion that we pitched them at the end that had no impact on the war is why they got the good terms they did in the negotiation, which could have been better if only the evil, mean Republicans didn't do it earlier. Anybody want to take action on that? Anybody want to throw a bet on that? That's not going to happen over the next few weeks? Like, I'm not saying we'll be all the way to the negotiating table, but all the rest of the shit, that's all going to happen. No takers. Yeah, I wouldn't take that bet for me either. It's pretty obvious that that's what's coming. Now, I want to talk about the purpose of the college campuses and the demonstrations on them. Not who's right, not who's wrong. What's the purpose? I'm going to tell you something that's going to be hard for some of you to believe. Some of you are already there, and I'm wasting my time today with this segment. It has nothing to do with Palestine. It has nothing to do with Israel. It has nothing to do with Arabs. It has nothing to do with Jews. Now, I didn't say that's not what the war was about. That's a different question. I'm not talking about the war. I'm not talking about the side that you're on in the war. I'm not talking about which one you put the phone finger on for and say you're number one. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the purpose of the demonstrations. What is their function? It is to sow division, discord, and chaos in America, because we just don't have enough of that yet. That is the only purpose. Columbia is going to cancel graduations. That pisses off a bunch of students. It does nothing to move the needle on Palestine, Israel. Nobody with any IQ close to 100, anything close to three digits, is under any illusions or delusions that students demonstrating at Columbia will have any impact on what Benjamin Netanyahu does or Hamas does. No one. Or what Joe Biden does as far as giving these people money or not giving them or whatever they're going to do. No one believes that. Now, the useful idiots, the kids that get into college because there's no admission standards anymore, right? These morons who couldn't show you where Israel is on a map if it wasn't labeled, and they would probably have trouble if it was labeled. Like, give them a globe, where's Israel? They don't know. They have no idea, right? They believe that they're helping. That's not what I'm saying. The purpose of the demonstrations is in the hands of the people causing the demonstrations. The think tanks, the George Soroses, et cetera, the ones funding it, they're not doing it because they care about the war in Gaza. They don't care. They don't care at all. If they really cared, they could be doing more to influence that with the amount of money they're pumping into it by pumping it directly into things like trying to help Gaza, right? Humanitarian aid, whatever. No, it is to screw up our flow. It is to mess up our country even worse, and it is to set us up for even more riots in the future. This is Cloward-Priven. It's classic. It's destroying the country from within, using useful idiots from within, and it's very dangerous. How dangerous is it? Glad you asked. If you go back to the 1970s, about, say, when I came into the world, 71, 72, in that range, and you went to a country called Iran, you wouldn't recognize it as it sits today. Normal people doing normal things, no burqas, nobody under Sharia law. It was a normal, it was a corrupt country, right? Oh, so was Egypt, by the way. So was a lot of the Middle East that's not that way anymore, right? They were secular countries, and Iran was a secular country, corrupt secular country, run by a dude called the Shah, who was a puppet for the United States government and the CIA. And the people of Iran decided, we want to run our own country free of these imperialistic assholes. Noble goal. People in the country looking to seize control of this country said, look at all the useless or useful idiots that we can channel their rage. Next thing you know, there's over 50 Americans being held hostage. There's a complete regime change. The Shah is hauling ass. The United States has him. The Iranians want him back so they can kill him. He's going to die anyway. Eventually, we end up early in the Reagan administration with a plane landing in Germany and people singing Born in the USA without understanding that that song is actually not very pro-USA as the hostages are released. And woohoo, it's all over. But what happened in the interim? Iran became an Islamic state. Who did it? The useful idiot college students in Iran. That's who did it. Is that what they wanted? No. Is it what they thought they were going to get? No. There is a long history of tying into the youth because the youth are big enough to be violent and young enough to still be stupid if you plant an idea in them. And they also love to be built up and to believe that they're doing something that matters. And if you add professional agitators to that, you never know where you can move that needle. Now, it's a dangerous game for everybody involved. The useful idiots, obviously, it's dangerous. For all the people that are out here, like, what the fuck do we do? It's dangerous for us. But even the people behind it, it's dangerous for them. You can intend to be going to it, like, move the needle to a certain place. It can go too far, it can go the other direction. You never know what's going to happen, but they'll take their shot at it. But that's the purpose. And here's how I know it's the purpose. Remember I did the show recently on great thinkers, and once you understand what they're saying, life gets so much more clear, right? And by the way, can somebody give me a video check? Am I still looking good? I don't mean me looking good. I don't have an ego that way. I just meant am I clear, right? Because I look crystal clear here, so I'd like to know if I still am. Anyway, the reason you know that's what the purpose is because it's what it's doing. And here's how I mean it's what it's doing. I am watching people who are natural allies hate each other over this issue. I'm watching libertarians who I've watched have conversations for 10 years on social media, almost always agreeing, being at least 95% in agreement, and always being decent with each other when they disagree. Curse each other out, call each other names. Not libtard this and conservtard that. No, no, no. I'm talking about people that are absolutely in consort with each other almost all the time. And again, amicable in disagreement, tearing each other to shreds. I'm seeing it even happen with our friends over at Ron Paul Liberty Report. Dan McAdams is just being vicious with people like that he would normally get along with. I'm not going to stick my nose in there. I know better, right? Love Dan, but he's just one of many. I'm not picking on him. Understand that. I'm watching people hate each other that are people that are natural allies. So what do you think this does to people who are not natural allies? The purpose of the system is what the system does. The system is sowing discord and hatred even among people who generally are unified. So that's its purpose. And this is what you, when you see this shit on TV and you think the cops should go in there and clear that out, or those people have a right to protest. You know, you can have that discussion, but what's the reality? What's the important thing? Why is it happening? Why is it happening? Oh, and by the way, when you go in and occupy a building that doesn't belong to you and you get arrested, that's called the law, baby. Right? Jack, you're supposed to be an anarchist. And I am. I'm also a practical person. I'm a pragmatist in addition to being an anarchist. And if there's going to be a government, then there's certain things that they need to be doing to at least pretend that they're doing their jobs. And one would be when somebody trespasses in a building, they get the fuck arrested. Right? When somebody owns a piece of property, says, clear your shit out of this, and you don't, that's criminal trespass. Right? Now, Jack, you're picking a side. No, see, because I'm not picking a side. And here's how you know I'm not picking a side. There's probably no cause that would make my heart swell up five sizes like the Grinch's did on Christmas Day, like ending the Fed. I hate the Fed. I think the Fed is the primary cause of most problems in the world because it's not that they themselves are just that inherently evil. It's there's so much inherent evil that's doable with fiat printed money that wouldn't be doable if it wasn't there. So ending the Fed, I am all in. I have a side. If somehow these college students were campaigning to end the Fed, you would think I'd be like, oh, no, we got – no, not if you're occupying buildings you don't belong in. Unless, well, if it was the Federal Reserve Banks, maybe that would be different. But you're preventing people who just spent $40,000 a year to go to Columbia, did all the work and are ready to graduate. They can't graduate, and you think you're helping? By criminally trespassing, by destroying things, by attacking other students? Not all of them are doing it. The purpose of the system is what it does. Your response to me pointing out these facts and being outraged at me is proof. The purpose is to make us fight with each other. This is why I haven't covered it very much. Because in the end, I don't give a fuck. My enemies are fighting. I will let them. I hate the school system. And I hate big government. And big government and the school system are fighting with each other. I don't have a problem. Now, the results long term could be a problem, but only if we all focus on it and get torn to shreds by it. This is another one of those fights. It's not my fight. It's not my fight. And I'm going to tell you something else. I've seen leaked documents. Every school that this shit's happening on listed a month and a half after what went down in Israel with Hamas and the hand gliders and all that shit. This was planned last year. The purpose of the system is what it does. Moving on, let's do some shit that actually helps people in their own lives. I want to start out with a question I got, and I'm very encouraged when I get questions like this, because when young people ask me questions, it tells me that we have future to look forward to. Young, like when you have a 16-year-old kid listens to this and cares and starts putting practical things in his own life, awesome, right? So William D. says, I am 16 and I'm trying to start a small wooden 4x12 by 1 foot deep garden box. My idea was to compost dead leaves, old sawdust, horse poop, and grass clippings in the box with some dirt from my property. I would water it to help it decompose, plant a cover crop mixture on top, strengthen it further, and kill all the weeds that might have been in the compost. I want to maybe start onions and maybe some flowers in the fall or next spring, and next year I can start growing produce. My question for you is, if you think there is anything unrealistic or misinformed about this plan, anything that will definitely fail, or anything that you would recommend, I am trying to do something that works for me, like you've suggested. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. William from Idaho. It's not a terrible plan, William. It's not the best plan. And this is why. When you take all those materials that you want to compost and you put them into that box together, they are going to have a thermophilic reaction at first. So if you're going to try this, what you want to do is once you put it all in there and water it really good, you want a thermometer and you want to take its temperature. And you don't, and you want it to, because it's going to be a long, relatively low, only 1 foot. The good news about that is you will get decent air exchange because air can move 1 foot through compost, right? So even though you're not getting much airflow from the bottom or the sides, you got 1 foot down. You're probably going to be okay there. But if you plant into it before that thermophilic cycle is complete, you're literally going to burn the roots of anything that you try to plant. So there is a few things we could do. One, you could go through a rapid composting, high turn compost, standard, you know, Berkeley method of composting. And you could mix that with the native soil that you have in, let that age for a week or two, and then go ahead with a really hardy cover crop. You know, something like real simple for something like this, cowpeas, and I would go with like an heirloom, like a Red Ripper, and buckwheat. You know, and you can probably then, you're going to come to a flower with the buckwheat, go ahead and mow it down at about 6 weeks and plant it again. And if you mow it down with like a scythe and, you know, mow it down until you're only a few inches from the surface, but you're not all the way to the surface, both of them will regrow some, but especially the cowpea will, and it'll regrow with that second crop of buckwheat. And you'll probably be in great position by fall to plant into that, especially things like, you know, spring onion and stuff like that. Yeah. And that would be kind of the best hybrid of your idea. The other thing would be go ahead and do what you're going to do, but take its temperature and wait till you're fully past your thermophilic cycle. And then do, again, a really aggressive winter cover crop, something that is very, very hardy. Buckwheat and cowpea would be ideal. There's other things that will be in my cover crop course that will be coming out soon. But both of them will work. But the problem with composting and planting into compost while it's running is always going to be that you usually get some level of retarded, disrupted growth. Now, cowpeas, peas, beans, things like that will often do okay. And when you talk about mixing in some soil with it and all, if you'll let it, again, come down in temperature, that active component of the compost. And the other thing I would do with this is I would add worms. Now, here's another option that you have, lasagna garden it. This will be a slow compost that your summer cover crop will tolerate well. So what you could do then is your sawdust, horse poop, grass clippings, do them in layers. And then when you get up to about 4 to 5 inches of depth, if you have it, do leaves or wood chips as in one more layer, and then do a soil layer and then mulch on top of that. And that lasagna garden approach, because you've not incorporated all the elements, will have a much better, longer, slower breakdown. And again, add worms. And you're going to get a lot of worms cycling nutrient up and down through the column that way. And I would go either with a rapid turn compost, give it a couple weeks to age, because you could be done with that in, 25 days. And then mix that with your soil and then give that a couple weeks to age in place because you have time then, right? Or I would go with the lasagna method. If you do what you're planning on doing, which is basically build a compost pile in the box, it may take a lot longer than you'd expect. It may also work. Whatever you do, William, I bet you there's a lot of people in this audience would love to hear follow-up from you. Let us know what you did and give us progress reports. Because one of the ways that we learn, because I've never done what you're asking about doing, I can only take the information I have and surmise what the result will be, is to actually test and try. And the worst thing that's going to happen, you're going to get shitty results from your cover crop. It's probably still going to give you some mulch and some roots in the system. You can plant late in the summer, another summer cover crop, and then interplant your winter crop to spring. And it's still going to be okay. Nothing here is going to give you, like, you're not going to have everything die or something like that. It's not going to explode or catch on fire. All right. Let's move on to the next one. how do you fill and maintain the air pump in a vacuum chamber sealer? So I'm going to say this again about Velour. Their biggest weakness is their documentation, their instructions. Not only is there something lost in translation sometimes between Chinese, Chinglish, and English, they're very thin on their documentation. Like, that's just something we accept when we're dealing with this company. They make some really good shit, and they have some really great deals. I haven't got one for you today, but yeah, their documentation is thin. But it says to fill it up to the line in the window of the vacuum pump and to make sure that you change the oil regularly, which you should. And I would say if you use it a lot, you're looking at 90 days. If you use it intermittently, you're looking at once every 6 months. We'll also tell you if you keep your vacuum sealer somewhere where it gets pretty cold, like in a shop or something like that, and you go to use it in winter, that if you go ahead and do what I'm about to tell you and check the oil, it will often look cloudy. That's just because the viscosity has gotten very thick because it's cold. And the thing to do then is to run it with, like, set your sealing time to a zero so that you're not actually sealing anything. You're not running your heat with no bag in there, and run it twice before you start vacuuming, because the pump running itself will warm the oil up. If you don't, what will happen is you get a really shitty result. Your first one or two times that you try to vacuum seal, you won't get a full vacuum, right? So where do you get to this pump? And again, the Velour and my VacMaster, that I've used both of them, they work the same way. And I know someone that has another well-known brand, and theirs works the same way. So it's probably going to be for everybody, not just those of you that bought the Velour. You have this big square device, and on the back of it, there'll be a few screws on the back panel. You take those screws off, and the back panel comes off. And then you're looking inside at the working mechanisms. Right about the center, there'll be a vacuum pump. It'll be pretty obvious what it is. And there's a little window on it, and there's a little thing on the top, and you take that off, and you fill it up. And you have kind of a minimum level on the window. You'll be a lower line and an upper line. And ideally, you want the oil somewhere between those two lines. If you overfill it, definitely remove some of the oil from it. You know, using something like a bulb squeezer is a good way to get it out. You can stick it down in the hole and take it out. Otherwise, you're opening the bottom drain, and then you're going to drain probably more than you want to drain. But it is not hard. It is not hard. The builder says, and then you find a rat in a wheel cage staring at you. Hopefully not. But yeah, that's it. It's not hard. But I brought this up, one, because I've been asked by two different people about it. But two, and so I fear more people have the question than ask. But two, it is one of those things. Oil for these things is not expensive. Changing the oil, everything I just said, except there's a little nub on the bottom that drains out. Drain the oil into something and dispose of it. Pour new oil back in. The number one thing you can do to extend the life of the vacuum pump itself is change that oil on a regular basis. If you don't, once the viscosity of the oil becomes compromised, becomes too thin to do its work, or it becomes too contaminated, or whatever its breakdown problem is, every time you use it after that, you're damaging your pump a little bit at a time. And then it's gradually, then suddenly, it's just not seeming to work quite as well as it did. And blah. Now, here's the good news. If you have any mechanical ability at all, if you own a chamber vac and the vacuum pump does die beyond repair, replacing it is actually really, really easy to do. It's, you know, it's easier than most parts on most cars. I would say that, like, yeah, it's easier than a water pump on a car. You know, I'm trying to think of, like, what is it the same as, you know? Like, I don't know, but it's I would say it's easier than access. It's easier to access. It's a few bolts and some connections, and just make sure you buy the right part. So, but if you take care of it, you probably won't have to do it for a very, 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 very long time. Next up, somebody asked me about a private email option, and they sent me a whole bunch of stuff and these different companies, and these are paid options and free, and everybody on the internet says use Proton Mail or whatever. And I want to explain to you that no matter what an email provider says about keeping your email private, that any one of them that gets a request from a governmental organization that's legitimate, that asks for your records, that will be given to them. And most of them give away your email to these three-letter organizations all the time anyway. I would say that probably the least offensive among those would-be proton male. They're not terrible, but it's not going to make you Jason Bourne. And then before I even tell you what you can do to change this dynamic, what you need to know is you are only one half of every transaction when it comes to email protocol. So I can do everything right, and I can email Builder of Castles, and if Builder of Castles is an absolute moron with no security protocols whatsoever, every email I send him, then whoever gets his email has my email, right? And I could even decide, like, I really wanted to know what Jack Spirko was up to and tell Google I want all Gmail recipients of any email from me that I want that email, and Google will give it to them. Now, Google will not give it to them if somebody just phones them up and says, hi, I'm Agent Jackass and I want this information. But if they're presented with a warrant or a FISA warrant, which can be obtained by any government jackass that wants to, basically, they're going to give it to them. So no matter what you do with your email, it's only as secure as the people you're emailing. My approach, and this is easy for me because I run a business and I run my own hosting and I own my own server. I host my email on my server. I use a client. I'm an old man, so I use Outlook because that's what I came up with. But there's other clients that do this. You know, Mac has Mac Mail, and there's Thunderbird and other clients like that. And I use a POP email service. You send me an email. It is my server. I leave my computer on all the time. All the time. And every 1 minute, Outlook goes, what's there? Pulls it down and deletes it off my server. So even if somebody hacks my server, they can only get the email that's there now, and as long as they stay hacked in, it shows up. Yeah. But again, when I email Jesse right here, right, he's planning Trumbuschino squash and asking a question in the right formats. So I'll even start for you and get to it, Jesse. If I email Jesse, my email security is only as good as Jesse's email security for that mail and for every mail I ever sent him. But there, you know, if you're using something like a VPS, virtual private server email option, which you can get pretty cheap. You're on a shared server, but you are walled off. And you're not a honeypot. You're this one small email address. You have your own domain name, and you run your email on that, and you use a protocol similar to what I do, which is pull and delete. You're pretty damn secure. Now, your home network, right, your home machine is only as secure as your practices, your firewall, et cetera. But you're a lot less vulnerable, and you control your email. However, the only way to really ensure that your email communications are as secure as they can possibly be, not completely secure, but as secure as they can possibly be, would be to have all your contacts that you want on full secure email on an email that you manage that way, and all your emails between each other are on those emails only, and then your general lifestyle bullshit that doesn't matter, like subscribing to the kitten of the day meme email, are on Yahoo, Google, whatever, right? Or at least theirs are, because if I was doing that, I would keep everything on mine. So I don't think this is something to get too much into what about. The government is reading your email, and always remember that. Real private communication is best done with end-to-end encrypted messaging services, like you can do for yourself with Start9 Embassy servers. It's interesting to me that Start9 has not developed an email-based solution where you could create your own kind of email network for people and set up email addresses and stuff like that on Start9. I think that would be very, very interesting. And Tom says he wishes PGP would have caught on better. I don't even know what that is, Tom. You'll have to tell me. Maybe you can tell everybody you're here. So then Liberty Garden, I'm going to go ahead and answer that right now. Liberty Garden says, so when do you pull your email to your laptop? How do you see it on your iPhone or vice versa? And Builder has got it exactly right. I don't. I don't have email on my phone. I don't want email on my phone. I don't care about having email on my phone. I work enough. When I walk out of this office and I'm in my living room, if I want to see email, I have to come in here. That's a lifestyle thing, by the way, that I think more people should do. People who are constantly on their devices are constantly on their devices because there's constantly something there to bring them to it. Now, I will tell you, when I have email on my phone and my laptop, I maintain a ProtonMail account. it gets used for a few things here and there. It's nice to be able to send myself a file with or something like that. But I use it when I travel, and Tom, who takes care of stuff here, what he'll do for me is when I travel, I'll say, Tom, I'm leaving. By the way, Tom, I'm leaving for exit and build, and I'll be leaving Thursday morning and coming back Sunday evening of that week. And what he'll do is he'll set it so any email I get to my regular email server will forward to my Proton mail and delete off my server as soon as it does. I'll either handle that email, delete that email, or put it in a box that says follow up. If it's something, and it'll be a small amount of stuff that really requires me to be home to follow up on it. And when I get home, I'll just forward all those emails back to myself when my regular mail is turned back on. That's not something everybody's going to do. Because how does Tom do that? I don't fucking know. I mean, when I need something done that I don't know how to do, I hire somebody to do it for me. But it's a very... It, to me, and this is true. See, 1 million pumpkins says it's very divisive to always be on devices. Yeah, I want to say, like, you know, when you go to a restaurant and you meet with friends or something, and when you sit down, like, you do your last little bit of bullshit or something like that, and then you take your phone, and because you actually are going to be there for them and talk to your friends, you put the phone on the table, but you put it screen down. Yeah, that's not good either. Put the fucking thing away. Have a meal with your friend or family member. Like, I can't tell you how many times Dorothy and I will be out for lunch or something, and we'll look and we'll see, obviously it's like daughter and mom. But mom is like grandma, really, at this point. Daughter's like adult on her own life. And grandma's sitting there disgusted and sad because she's finally spending time with her daughter who is on her phone. It's disgusting, guys. Put the fucking shit away. Have a work-life balance. I didn't know I was going to go there today, but yeah, that's my thought there. Okay, next up is a use for the releasable cable ties that I never thought of. And again, it replaces these. And some of you, as soon as I picked it up, went, oh. For those who can't see them because you're on audio, these are the Zazzy adjustable little pulleys on them with clips for adjusting your plant lights. And what this person said they do is they make basically like a chain. Like, you remember your kid, you made a chain for Christmas with red and green construction paper, and every day, like, you make it, this is a cool thing if you never did this with your kids when Christmas comes, you know, like, you make that around Thanksgiving, and you put 24 rings on it, and you hang it, and on December 1st, you cut one ring off, you cut a ring off every day, and when you get the one ring, it's Christmas morning, so you kind of make a chain like that out of them to make it as long as you want. And then as you need to bring your lights up, you just keep closing your zip ties and adjusting them up. If you go too far, you just pull them back down because they're releasable. I'll tell you what's cool about that. The one negative in these things is when they're all the way up, you're still looking at, what is that, freaking 3 inches? 3 inches of vertical space you give up. Now, what I'll do is I'll actually take the top one and go directly on. So this is not... coming, you're still looking at like 2 inches. So by doing that, you can bring those lights all the way to the highest point, whatever kind of rack system you have. And I have them anyway. And it's like one of those things you go, you know, Jack, you should have thought of that yourself. Like, I've even fixed freaking a tie rod one time with zip ties. Don't recommend it, but it was a temporary fix and it worked. I never thought of doing that. It's absolutely, actually completely brilliant. All right, the last thing I want to talk about today before we wrap up and I give you some stuff on the way out. I really want you to understand that things are going to get worse. The transgender nonsense, the woke nonsense, worse. The economic situation, worse. It doesn't mean there won't be any moments of better. But I see a lot of people in this audience, I can read into what they're saying to me, that think that things will go back to the way they were. Like, I don't know, the Orange Man wins in November, and a year and a half into it, interest rates are back to where you can buy a house with a 3.5% interest rate. Is that possible? Sure. Is it probable? No. And anything like that that does occur, any pushback toward normalcy will be temporary at best. We cannot spend $34 trillion that doesn't exist and then just go back to the way things were. When I started this show, some of you have been around long enough that you know, but when I started this show back in 2008, we were headlong going into the Great Recession. and people were freaking out. It was part of why the show took off the way that it did. Because I said, get your money out of the market. Everything's about to go to shit. And when it did, I had tons of people emailing me, this is it. This is the big one. What do I do? You know, people ready to get a bunker and live in the middle of nowhere. And I'm like, this isn't it. And I forecasted something called the false recovery. And I said we would have this massive false recovery. The band would start playing again. And it would seem like happy days are here again, right? Ba, 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 right? It would be all great. But it would not last. That it could not last because of the structural damage that has been done to our economic situation. And that we had about reached the end of it. But we had one good, load the casino tables back up and do this again in us. But then that would be, the other side of that, would be what everybody's been waiting for. Now we're in it. And as I keep saying, people keep saying, but when? Now. Last year. The year before. It's here. And those of you that are a little bit older than me, like I remember the 70s sort of, but not like in a, you know, somebody that was a young adult in the 70s. So somebody that's like 65 remembers the 70s and stagflation better. So that's what everybody said when, you know, Carter was in office and Ford and Nixon and Reagan came and it was mourning in America. But that's because Reagan loaded up the credit card again. Reagan saved Social Security with the largest tax increase that's ever been committed on the American people. He just called it saving Social Security. Reagan did a lot of things that worked for a time. And you could look at them and say, and eventually we're going to pay for this. And if you were 60, you didn't care. Because you would have made a correct assumption in that by the time I'm 100, I'll either be dead or not give a fuck. But if you were a young person at then, you're thinking, this is going to hit right in the middle of my retirement, and now it's here. Now it's here. And it doesn't mean that a lot of other mistakes weren't made since then that compounded it and made it worse. But this was the eventuality that was going to eventually happen. Like, we had to end up here. And why? Because the purpose of the system is what it does. So what has the system done since 1971 when Nixon closed the gold window? Well, one, it has exploded the number of administrators in every profession. There's more administrators in education, healthcare, right? Government as a whole. Like, there's more administration than there has ever been at any time in history. And when you build up administration, then mission suffers. It's the only way that it's going to work out. The thing that the organization is supposed to do will suffer when the number of people in the organization who exist only for the purpose of administrating the organization grows exponentially. We have more administrators in healthcare now than we have doctors. Gee, I can't figure out why there's a problem. There's more administrators in health insurance than there are people with medical knowledge in insurance, right? On just the health insurance side of things. The purpose of the system is what it does. I played for you a senior economic advisor to the president of the United States at the beginning of today's show who can't explain how debt works. And says, oh, is that right? Is that how that works? Yeah, that's how that works. He's asking the reporter that asked him the question if she knows if he's right. It's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. It is going to, and the riots are going to get worse. Most likely election prediction right now, unless something really goes sideways with one of these trials with Trump and he's in prison. And he could still win in prison. That would be an interesting thing. But the most likely outcome of this election is Donald Trump is the next president of the United States. He's 45 and 47. They're going to drum up these demonstrations, these Palestinian demonstrations, for all they're worth through this summer. They're organizing and structuring right now for a second series of demonstrations. And I think they want Trump elected, even though they're going to demonstrate against Trump once Trump gets elected, because they want another reason to demonstrate. Because as I said before, as I said last week and the week before, these Palestinian demonstrations on these college campuses, these do not help Biden win. They reduce his opportunity to win. They anger a key demographic for him to just sitting out the election. And they anger a lot of people who consider themselves common sense Democrats, to the point where, like, this guy has no stance on this, and those are your middle of the road voters. Those are your people that vote for Donald Trump in one election and Joe Biden in the next. This pushes them right back to Trump. because the middle decides every election. So this helps Trump, but they don't like Trump. But this helps Trump, and they're doing it. The purpose of the system is what it does. The purpose of this is not to influence Palestinian policy or Israeli policy or U.S. policy toward Israel or U.S. policy toward Hamas or anything else. As I said, the purpose of this is to sow division in America. And the more you riot, the more you burn things, the more thing you tear things apart, the more you destroy and undermine the credibility of government as a whole and media as a whole, which both are on the last thread of any trust that anybody has them in the first place. We're being set up for a revolution of some sort. Exactly what it is, I don't know. And Builder says that I am gone, but it could be his internet. Let me know, guys. Do you still see me, hear me, etc.? Since Aaron says they want Trump elected. I do think they want Trump elected, not because they're pro-Trump, because they know what they can cause once it happens. Now, let's say Trump loses. Well, what they're probably going to do then is try to get the right to riot, but the right's not big on riots, you know, January 6th aside, right? The right just doesn't generally go out and riot, but they may be able to drum up some of the militant types or whatever, but I don't think it's going to come to that. I think they're going to have left-wingers rioting in left-wing cities that all voted for Biden under the auspice that Trump, you know, and they'll drum up the whole Russian collusion, all this other bullshit. We have a multiple count felon, even if he's not not convicted of anything. Most of the federal trials, in fact, I would say all the federal trials are going to be pushed back behind the election. Now Trump can pardon himself. Who knows what they can do with that? If I were Trump in that situation, I would pardon myself on day one, right? I mean, that's not pro-Trump. I'm just saying if I were Trump and I was staring down all these federal charges and I could say, I pardon myself with a big pen, I would do it. Why wouldn't you do it? Why wouldn't you make it go away? And imagine what they can do with that. And then the Democrats are going to try to impeach him on day one, and they probably won't have a majority when they go to do it, but they're going to try to do it anyway, and it's going to be the cornerstone of the midterms. This isn't hard to see, and all of it is going to get worse. And then here's, you know, are any of these people smart enough to think like Ted Kaczynski? What do you love him or hate him? And didn't really care for the guy, but he was a genius, absolute certified genius. One of the things Kaczynski said in his manifesto was, when things go completely to shit, you don't want to be the side in power. If you want to take over and restructure everything in society, then you want your opponent in charge when shit goes completely sideways. So there is this possibility that the people really pulling the strings here, the Soros level, right, are like, we want wholesale revolution in America. We want complete control of everything. And therefore, that which is most in opposition, not direct opposition, but most in opposition to us, must fail. We do not want Brandon and the Democrats in charge when the implosion comes. That, I think, is the play. The only reason I won't go out and say, you know, like everything else I said, like this is all going to happen, the only reason I won't go that far with it is that requires a 3D chess level of thought. And I don't know if these people are actually capable of it because they have shown themselves time and time again to be incompetent. Anyway, with that wrapped up, let me remind you guys that you can help support us in the work that we do by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day is from Vavor, and I'm not going to talk about it for very long because it's a pretty simple product, and I have a great write-up for you with all the details and a great video with more details in it, and I did put this thing to a serious test. I ran my kilowatt meter on it. I ran my 4-probe meter thermometer set with it, and I have screenshots from that testing right in the write-up here, and I don't know if you can see that blown up on your screen there, but it's very well done, and it is the Vivor Hot Box Food Warmer. What this thing is a stainless steel, at least on the outside, it's an aluminum frame that keeps the weight down, low-temperature oven is the best way I can describe it. It uses a ceramic-style heating element that works like a semiconductor, which means as it gets hotter, it actually uses less electricity. It's kind of crazy. It does an excellent job of holding the temperature you set it at, anywhere between 100 and 170 degrees. I didn't push it to 170. I pushed it to 160, and it takes a long time to go from 150 to 160. It doesn't take hardly any time at all to get up to like 140. It's 10, 15 minutes. It is designed to keep food warm, not to cook. It is not an oven for cooking. It's a low-temperature oven for keeping food warm. The beauty of it, the big, and I mean the big aluminum disposable pans fit in it. Four will fit in it. That is a crap ton of food. And each shelf will hold one of those big pans or two smaller pans if you put them in long ways from the front. And that means you can hold a ton of food warm. So this is excellent for people like me that run big workshops and have a lot of food and we have to keep it warm and we've run out of space. It's also excellent for if you're the people that do your, you know, Thanksgiving dinner for the family every year, if you have big get-togethers and gatherings, if you competition cook in barbecues and stuff like that, it's fantastic. And for you barbecue guys, set this sucker to like 150, 160 degrees, wrap your food up, stick it in there, throw a whole brisket in there overnight. It will be the most tender thing you've ever eaten. So even though it's not for cooking, it will be great for the Texas cheat. It's just awesome. They're right at just under $300, plus you get an extra 5% off with my links. This one's not for everybody, folks, but if you're a person it's for, you're probably like, man, I need to look at that. So I wanted to bring this one around you for you, and Valor was good enough to send me one, and I will be using the hell out of it for family gatherings, including taking it. My nephew, he's like really great about putting the things together for the family. His house is the biggest house of everybody's, and they do pretty well for themselves. So we have a lot of family gatherings, get-togethers and stuff over there. And there's like a lot of times when there's just not room to keep all the food warm. This thing weighs like 40 pounds. You can just pick it up, throw it in the back seat of your car, take it wherever you want to go as long as you got 110 power. So even tailgating and stuff, if you have power, farmers markets and stuff like that, if you sell food, excellent small stores and catering businesses, et cetera. Again, it is electric as long as you have power. It pulls about 1,000 watts, and then that starts dropping. It runs at about 800 watts, and it keeps going down as you get hotter. It's crazy. And when it cycles off, it's only pulling like 1.5 watts to run the little thermostatic control, and it'll come back on, and it has about only 3 degrees of variance. It's a great tool, definitely worth checking out. Next up, since that's not for everybody, and tomorrow I will do the griddle cooking podcast episode I talked about, I wanted to bring around the E-Tech City Laser Grip Digital Laser Temperature Gun. These things are great. This is something everybody should own. They're like 18 bucks. They're very affordable. If you read my write-up on this, guys, I had an HVAC tech in my house. He had a $200 Fluke thermal gun, and I had my little $18 E-Tech City, and we both pointed them at the air vent. We were 1 degree apart from each other. That's plenty accurate. There's a ton of uses for these things. This is one of those tools that, yeah, it's kind of cool, but I don't really need one. And then when you get one, you're like, oh, my God, look what I can do with this. One thing I do with mine, with my water tanks, my rain catch tanks, they're black. You can't really see the amount of water. You know, take the top off and stick a 2x4 down in it, how much water is in the tank. All you do is take the thermal gun and start running the light up. There's a little red, like, laser pointer light. And right where it changed, the temperature goes up. And right where it hits the water, the temperature drops. And you know exactly where the water – like, that's just one thing. We find microclimates. I've used it for little projects for my grandkids to learn about microclimates. I use it in cooking. That's why we'll talk about it tomorrow. It's a great tool, 18 bucks. And, again, it's one of those tools you will not appreciate until you actually owe it or own it. Real quick, I do have one question here from Jesse. He says he's planting Trumbuscino squash. How many would you plant for a family of three? How much squash do you want to eat? I would say you want at least four vines, and maybe that's two vines per planting, so that could be as many as eight total plants because you end up with some squash bug damage and you always have potential for like goose rage to kill one or something like that. But four vine sets, because some of them might produce like crazy and some of them might not. The worst thing that happens is you have extra, you can give it away, you can compost, you can feed it to your livestock. Right. I mean, and they store fantastic. You don't have to do anything to store them. Put them in a cool, dry location, and they'll store for almost a year. I still have a couple from last year, and they're starting to grow this year. So you're not going to get in danger of not being able to store them. And even if you are going to eventually, like, do a dehydration or a canning or a freezing or whatever. The beauty of the Trumbuschino and all winter squash, you only do that to the ones you decide to do that with and you have time. Like at the end of your season, you can just set them aside and get everything else done and do that. But I would say probably 3 to 4, you know, vine setups with that will be, you know, again, if you grow too much, it's not really that big of a deal, is it? You know, we use it even in, sometimes we use it in our dog food that we make, where we will chop one up and throw it in the slow cooker and make a mash out of it, mix it in with their chicken and their other stuff. It's just a fantastic plant, and I really recommend you consider growing it if you haven't. I'm actually growing, I can't remember what they're called now, but they're basically the Italian squash that's not a squash before the Italians knew what squash was, before it was brought back from the New World. They're actually a gourd, and they grow in a long, like a serpent gourd or something like that, but they're not a serpent gourd. They're called something else. I'm growing some of those this year to see how they work out. Anyway, with that, guys, again, tomorrow we're going to do a show on griddle flat top cooking. I think you'll enjoy it. You know, I have a Blackstone and one of the Vivor electric griddles, but it doesn't matter what you have or if you're going to eventually add a griddle to your life. There's certain things you can do with a griddle that are just awesome. And a lot of what I'll talk about tomorrow, even if you don't have a griddle, you'll be able to do. I'll tell you about a dish I made for my wife and myself yesterday that was beautiful. It was absolutely gorgeous, and there's a ton of variables you can do with it. And, yes, you can do it on your stovetop, and it will blow you away. So what is it? Tune in tomorrow to find out. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow. Are they going to bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month.